glad that I am last because I think in particular Eileen's intro slides will allow me to actually maybe get through all these slides that I've prepared in time. Oh, and Barb, please nudge me at 10 minutes.
Okay.
I'm doing that. Great. So what I'd like to talk to you about is a project that I have been working on over the past year and a half with colleagues that are listed here from Practice Matters, which is a consulting firm, and then colleagues from the Westchester Medical Center in Westchester County of New York State. So I have no financial relationships to disclose. So this is where I want to go, and again, I'm going to really breeze through a lot of the rationale because I think Eileen covered that wonderfully. What I'd like to really describe to you is the methodology and focus on the methodology that we use to develop a social marketing campaign to reduce primary, medically unnecessary cesarean sections and inductions in a population in the Hudson Valley. So we're going to talk about social health marketing, and then as I mentioned, we'll go through the methodology, and then I'll actually show you the galleys or the images that we came up with and just tested in the last couple months in post-production focus groups. The other thing that I should mention is that in your booklets, you probably all saw the March of Dimes images. So obviously today is launches Prematurity Awareness Month, and we really see the reduction of cesarean sections, as Eileen mentioned, as a way to reduce the late. All right. Thank you so much. So they have a great social marketing campaign that says healthy babies are worth the wait. And so I want you to know that we absolutely have been complementing that work. We have focused our work on a particular region, particular population, and actually received funding from the March of Dimes New York chapter to do this work. So we're not competitors, we're collaborators. So you've seen this already. Again, you know that Eileen mentioned 1 in 3 births right now is born via cesarean section, and you'll see some slight variances by race and ethnicity, with African Americans typically having the highest rates of cesareans. So these are some regional data. Again, this is from the Hudson Valley Regional Perinatal Forum. And so that you see that cesarean sections in what we call the late preterm group, the 34 to 36 week, are rising. And you see them, you know, really we're worried about that group. And we see that increased C-sections are leading to this increase in late preterm. So again, these are just some of the complications. I'm going to breeze through these. Increased NICU admissions, increased respiratory illness, jaundice, sepsis, newborn feeding problems. And then what I haven't listed here, but I should definitely also mention, there are maternal complications associated, infections, increased incidence of blood transfusions, damage to pelvic organs, post-op pain, and then there may be sequelae that lead into their future reproductive health, such as miscarriages or ectopic pregnancies. So we really do want to reduce what we're calling the early term births between 37 and 39 weeks. We want to reduce that group in terms of cesarean sections as well. So again, I'm sure many of you already know this. I think what kind of put this on the upward trajectory in our consciousness and us really talking about it as public health professionals was the ACOG recommendation that came out in August 2009 that said that we don't want to see any elective inductions or cesarean deliveries before 39 weeks gestation without clinical indications. So this is really, really important. I think the first time that such a prestigious group came out and said before 39 weeks, if there's no clinical indication for delivering, then we should keep that baby in there. So now I'm going to show you some regional data. And again, this was collected by my colleagues at WMC, the Westchester Medical Center. And they actually surveyed moms to see what they thought, you know, what they thought about kind of the normal time period of pregnancy and what they thought about the complications or safety of various delivery modes. So what you see here is that 67% actually said that that cesarean section, they said that it was false that cesarean delivery is safer than vaginal delivery. But there were differences about who answered this incorrectly versus correctly. And characteristics of incorrect respondents were being clients or patients of color. So African Americans and Hispanics were less likely to get this question right. And also those without a high school diploma were less likely to answer correctly. So I mentioned that we also asked about length of pregnancy, and many of them understood that a full-term pregnancy is between 37 and 41 weeks, which we were comfortable with. Obviously, we want to push them more towards the 40, 41 weeks, but at least we got good feelings about people understanding that the natural gestational age that we want for full-term. So we also asked about, can deliveries be scheduled for convenience at 35 or 36 week? And so again, many people are answering that, no, we don't want to see this, that this is false, and that we were pleasantly surprised by this finding. So again, I'm going back and forth between this and some national data. And a part of this work, which I'm not going to talk about today, was an extensive literature review and secondary data analysis. And this was a piece that actually I borrowed this slide from my colleagues at the March of Dimes in Illinois, which is where I'm from. But I thought this, you know, again, reinforces what Eileen said about maternal reasons for elective cesarean section. So many of them obviously are altruistic in nature, thinking that there's a risk to the baby if I deliver vaginally, that I might have future complications. That you know, there may be trauma to my vagina. So they're very real, maybe not totally accurate, but very real reasons to these women about why they've chosen to deliver electively. So that requires, the onus is on us to do some more education there. So two levels of responsibility, absolutely. And I want you to know that we've only focused on one here. Obviously, our social marketing campaign is aimed at consumers. But I think what we have learned, in part from the March of Dimes experience, is that some of the biggest reductions in elective C-sections happen when you change hospital policy. Some of you may live in the big five states, which comprise about 40% of our live births in the U.S., which are us in Illinois, New York, which is the data I'm presenting today, Texas, Florida, and California. And there's some special work going on in those five states to look at how you affect hospital policies and develop that hard stop for elective C-sections. But again, we've only focused on consumer responsibility. So what is social marketing? So again, social marketing is the use of marketing principles and techniques to influence a target audience to voluntarily, I think that's important, accept, reject, modify, or abandon a behavior for the benefit of individuals, groups, and society as a whole. So, you know, not so different than traditional marketing. I think the techniques are very similar, but our goal is not to sell widgets, but to influence healthy behaviors and practices. So I want to breeze through this. Much of the research linking social health marketing and reproductive health focuses on family planning and contraceptive use, and a lot of it focuses on the work in developing countries. So again, our goal was to try to tackle and reduce the number of primary elective C-sections and inductions prior to 39 weeks. I mentioned a mixed methods approach, so we did do a secondary data analysis. I'm going to focus on the qualitative pieces, which were the key opinion leader interviews and focus groups. And again, we want to use this to develop a regional strategy to develop a social health campaign that's racially and ethnically appropriate. So you'll see some of the images in the galleys are of, you know, racially diverse populations. So the first stage was doing key opinion leader interviews, and these were done with public health professionals. They were about 30 minutes in length over the telephone, and these represented nonprofit organizations, leadership, and program coordinators, voluntary health organizations, local health department officials, etc. So this is just showing you quickly the demographics that were represented as part of that work. We focused it on three counties, Westchester County, which in these three has the largest number of births, followed by Orange County and then Rockland. So these are just kind of outside of New York City. Then you also see here time and current position. Almost half of them were pretty early in their careers in this position that they were currently in at the time of interview, and then you see the different workplaces. So what did we find? So we saw that obviously people are promoting full-term deliveries. They want to promote, and this is a quote, unmedicated vaginal, this quote from somebody in Westchester births. We asked them, what do they discuss with their clients? And breastfeeding comes up, birth planning, and prenatal care. They also acknowledge that specific populations, both teens and undocumented individuals, have a very passive relationship. And that, if you don't get anything out of this presentation, you'll see that as a theme from whoever you talk to, whether it be healthcare professionals or consumers. This feeling of lack of agency and inequality in that relationship. But at the same time, that the provider's recommendations hold a lot of weight. And what they say and what they tend, either directly or indirectly, promote in terms of delivery modes makes a huge difference. And then, you know, this is not statistically significant, but we did have a father who was very well informed, really supported his partner throughout the prenatal care experience, and mentioned that fathers should be consulted and included, and we take that too. And so you'll see one of the images does have a partner. So again, I won't go through these. We know these. These were just, again, some of the findings about when we asked about risks and benefits of delivery modes. These were those that came out for cesarean births and vaginal births. We also did a series of focus groups with women 18 to 44 years of age, again, in those three counties. They were roughly 90 minutes in length, and they were hosted at public libraries or community-based organizations, and the recruitment was done by Practice Matters and the Hudson Valley Perinatal Regional Forum. So again, each of the different areas, we were trying to select a different demographic. In Westchester, we were talking to African-American women of mixed socioeconomic status. They were both pregnant and postpartum. Rockland, we had a mixed group of African-Americans and Latinas, lower SES, both, and also pregnant postpartum. And then Orange was all white, middle SES, and Orange includes some semi-rural areas as well. Unfortunately, we wanted to have a fourth focus group of women who had not delivered, were not pregnant, and that was impossible. It was definitely a limitation, impossible to recruit for. They're not thinking about delivery modes, not thinking about being pregnant. So this is just a view of the demographics of the focus groups between the three counties. Many of this you'll know. So you'll see that Orange and Westchester counties are the most well-educated, and Orange has the highest income. So some of the findings include the impact of insurance status on the prenatal experience. So thinking about if you have public insurance like Medicaid, then you may be less likely to have a physician or healthcare provider that wants to listen to your desired delivery mode. Again, this unilateral delivery mode that it's really promoted by the healthcare provider. That they want to see some flexibility and fluidity in childbirth planning. And when we did the lit review, what we found is that the decision on a particular delivery mode is a very flexible, fluid, dynamic process that's happening throughout the pregnancy and up and through the childbirth experience. Definitely want more information from providers regarding childbirth and really honest dialogue about the different risks and different delivery modes. And they acknowledge that cesarean should be kept to a minimum. So again, I won't go through this. Many of these are similar to what was seen by the healthcare professionals in the key opinion leader interviews. So these are just some really nice quotes that birth is a natural process. First-time moms in particular need this type of information. I love to speak to us, tell us the truth. They, meaning healthcare professionals, don't tell us the risks of cesarean sections. So yeah, getting to the good stuff. So these are some of the images that we came up with. This is the first one. Again, we wanted to promote this idea of you need to have an equal partnership with your healthcare provider, that there should be this equality, that we want to promote, you know, this ideal of equality in that dialogue. If your pregnancy is healthy, have a vaginal birth. The tagline says, for an unborn baby to develop fully, health professionals recommend 39 weeks in the womb and not a day less. So you see all of that in the March of Dimes images also. Babies born by C-section may have more breathing and other medical problems than babies born by vaginal birth. And then it has a contact at WMC for more information. So this is something else. Now, interestingly enough, we did post-production focus groups as well to test these images. And this one came up for two reasons. One, unfortunately, many of the people were like, well, that's not realistic because so many of us didn't come in with partners. And the other one was like, well, they're smiling and that woman's on the scale. I was not smiling when I got laid. This is unrealistic. So there you go. So again, we're trying to promote this idea about self-empowerment, finding your voice. C-sections are major surgery, and they really liked that type of language, to be really clear about that. And again, the bottom is very similar to the other images. So I saved the best for last. The last image was overwhelmingly the most preferred by the focus groups, which is this one. C-sections are major surgery. Do not cut here. So again, similar language at the bottom, but they really liked this one. They thought it was very clear, succinct, to the point. So again, they did like the taglines, find your voice, C-sections are major surgery, do not cut here. These are just some comments about the copy, or the text should be succinct, large, and in contrasting color. They wanted realistic images of when we did the post-production focus groups, they wanted realistic images. So I mentioned some of the critiques that they had. They said that mothers in the first pregnancy were more receptive to the information. And that's interesting because many of the women who had already had cesarean sections, these types of dialogues that happened in the focus groups made them, there was a sense of defensiveness at some points because they thought, oh God, did I make the wrong choice? Did I not do what was best for me and my baby? Again, this idea about the lack of meaningful relationship with healthcare providers, and they really wanted it to talk about elective C-sections in particular. We know that some C-sections are medically indicated, and that's fine. That they wanted that 39-week gestation piece in the copy. So these are just thinking about next steps, where these images might be disseminated, provider these are suggestions from the focus groups, internet, social media outlets, mass transit, schools, supermarkets, and billboards. And then limitations, obviously, both sets of focus groups had pretty small sample sizes, as did the interview pool. I mentioned our inability to recruit nulligravidas, and then obviously it's a self-selected group of women, so we had flyers up in community-based locations as our primary recruitment strategy, and that was just due to IRB, so the people that came and made the phone call to be enrolled in the focus group were definitely a special group. And then I mentioned next steps, development of this outreach plan, the production of the actual posters, and then the development of the social media templates. And that's it. These are our funders, New York State Department of Health, the March of Dimes New York chapter.
Great. So why don't you stay up here? Okay. I'll move.
So you should take what I said at the end with a grain of salt. The initial focus groups that helped us to devise those, yes, they are definitely a mix. Is that what you were talking about? Okay, so those are actually, yes, okay. So you see at the very bottom the delivery modes for the focus groups.
Okay,
can you see
that?
That's because I was doing the
ratio.
And along those lines, so did you guys take into account what the woman said who had C-sections, who perhaps were medically indicated, did you guys make any alterations to sort of not lay the blame back on the woman?
Yes, so we were trying to be very, very careful about that, but balancing that need with the need that you don't want to read a whole lot of text on the poster, so we are trying to be really careful. That's why it's kind of like, if your pregnancy is healthy, and that's actually the same phrasing that the March Down is using in their images, if your pregnancy is healthy, have a vaginal birth. Really trying hard to do that, because there's definitely this feeling.
Yes.
I worked in a couple of focus groups on a patient education campaign about C-sections in LA this summer, and one of the things that came up, and I'm wondering if you found it too, is that women felt like they had never been given a about the possibility of emergency C-section during labor, and that they had information about breech, and but they didn't know that it was possible that you could go into labor and then need a C-section.
Yes.
Did that come up?
Absolutely, especially in the initial these focus groups. Absolutely, that I had made one decision pre, you know, delivery, and in the midst of delivery, you know, all this stuff happened, and I ended up having a, you know, emergency situation. Absolutely.
Let's see if Kara has something to add to that also. Do you, in terms of your data set, about the people who ended up with their emergency hysterectomy, were there even any pre-knowledge?
Oh, that was definitely a problem with my population as well. Like, it was, they felt that if they would have known more that this could even be remotely a possibility, that they could have handled it better. So even being told about it in their labor.
Elaine?
Well, I just wanted to comment that a lot of the practices that currently happen in labor cause emergencies that require cesareans. If you keep a woman flat on her back and you give her Pitocin and you give her an epidural, and then all of a sudden there's fetal distress, and oh, we have to rush to the OR for a C-section to save your baby. So women aren't told that there's a cascade of events that can be prevented.
And women feel so disempowered by all this that they don't even, they just take it as it's happening. They don't have their inner strength.
Let me ask one question. How many of you knew about the checklist and the pearls at all before today? Okay. Anybody using anything like a checklist? And how many of you work in the labor and delivery field, actually, in the... Okay, there's one. Two. All right. Three. Another hand here. All right. Other questions? Yes.
To talk about the C-section rate and their perception of what has happened. And there were a couple of things that I kept hearing over and over again that I haven't quite heard here. Absolutely all of the, you know, the induction and the epidurals and, you know, all of that is a major contributing factor. But one issue that I heard over and over again was that the perception on the part of both the providers and the nurses in labor and delivery, that in fact a C-section is safer than it ever has been. And in days gone by where you stayed away from it at all costs, that kind of is a piece of what happened. And around like the malpractice issue, it wasn't so much that the malpractice issue comes up. What people kept saying is, it's more about avoiding a bad outcome at all costs. And that kind of link that I was constantly hearing between C-sections are safer and I don't want a bad outcome. I mean, some of that's going to result into malpractice, but it is truly about the bad outcome. Those were messages. And the other thing I heard loud and clear, in particular from the nurses, was that it's changed the dynamic in labor and delivery. Not that there isn't certainly the need for more communication and better information from patients, but the patients, in fact, are presenting way more often, this is my plan. And they come in with a plan, and we're time managers in this country now. You know, we want to plan everything out. So if part of that plan is scheduling an induction, and not so much C-sections, but inductions, because this is when my mom can come to town to take care of the other babies and of the other kids, then that's what I want to do. And women have a lot more to say than they used to in labor and delivery. So, I mean, I think it's many people involved in this, and I was hearing slightly different things.
Well, the whole thing about that plan and scheduling induction, women aren't being told that induction lead to further interventions, which lead to fetal distress, which lead to cesarean sections. And so, yes, if you do all of these interventions and you start stressing the baby, you are going to feel like,
we need to do a C-section because it'll be safer for the baby. You've got to, you know, go back.
I'd like to add, you know, a certain number of people have emergency appendectomies while they're traveling in Europe, but we don't recommend people having their appendixes out before they travel. And, I mean, there is some reference point there that I think is important to be understood, and this is a very interesting type of major surgery that we can schedule because your mother's available on Thursday. I think that one of the things that I think is important to hear, and you are a classic to what all of these people have said, is that if the labor and delivery staff is a person who's been in delivering babies as a family physician for 30 odd years, pretty odd, I need to tell you, is that if your labor and delivery staff believe that sections are better, safer, and you want to avoid a bad outcome, we will come up with 100% sections within the next X period of time. It's clear. It has to be. Because which one of the births are you going to risk a bad outcome on? I mean, you'd have to almost come in the hospital and spit your baby out in 2 minutes to avoid the overwhelming ethic of what's going on there. So I think what these people, all of them, are raising are the issue of what, I mean, the postpartum depression has a lot to do with this. So I think we need to relate to the fact that what you brought to the table is the thing that we're pushing against.
Right. And you know, a lot of labor and delivery staff haven't seen the report by Amnesty International that came out last year that shows, I mean, the maternal mortality rate in the United States has gone from 8 in 100,000 to 17 in 100,000 in the past 10 years. So to think that cesarean section is safer, I mean, there's so many things that are linked to this increase in cesarean section that are bad outcomes, and people don't see that.
Yeah, and I mean, no one was saying that I didn't talk to anybody that didn't think the C-section needed to seriously come down. But I guess what I was hearing was similar things over and over again, but honestly, how complex the whole thing is. And how complex that decision-making is
right. When
you're in the moment,
right. In
L&D,
right. And
something looks like it's going wrong.
Right.
That
which is why you have to back up. Support normal for
you. Here's a hand.
Yes, one of the outcomes of our high C-section rate is felt overseas.
Is the what?
It's felt overseas. So that we're seeing in Africa, some countries in Africa, if they're not in the cities right now, we're seeing 30% C-section rates. And in Africa, this is really serious because the mother, they then feel the mother is committed to C-sections for the rest of her reproductive life. And so our habit or our justification for what we're doing is reaching to other countries where the consequences for the women is even much more serious than it is here. So I think that we should, I compliment the Midwives Association. We're doing all we can to get the truth out of it.
Yes.
I'm from Lebanon, and I've been working on the regional team on childbirth practices for the last 10 years doing research in the Middle East on this, where the notion of normal birth is no more existent. I mean, in Lebanon now, the C-section rate is approaching 50%, it's alarming. So, I just want to congratulate everyone for this session. It was beautiful, and I felt like, we were doing very similar work, and on the issue of consumer demand and the checklist and all of that, I just want to share an experience. We last year conducted a study, an intervention study, when we wanted to let women know about best practices because this information is not readily available to them. And we were focusing on few practices that probably no longer exist in the U.S., routine enemas and pubic shaving, and very simple stuff, that are routinely done, and or holding the baby at birth, which is not allowed, etc. So, and trying to tell the women in prenatal sessions that this is beneficial, and you should ask for this. you should ask not to be shaved, you should ask not to have an animal, you should ask for a baby, etc. And give them some communication skills, negotiation skills with the staff. We've been criticized because we did not, in our intervention, address the system or the providers, and we were focusing on consumer demand. nevertheless, it showed that regardless of the power relationship, inequality of power relationship between women and providers, who are more, mainly men in our setting, you find that things change when women know what's best for their baby and what's best for them. So I actually do believe that women should know and information should circulate, because most of the choices women make, like demanding C-section, demanding to be induced, setting the time limits, etc., are made on misinformation or misguided information. So yes, definitely. And just want to comment on what the lady just said. It does resonate overseas because most of our physicians are trained in the US or in the UK. They go back to these practices, and it's more alarming in our settings, because not in all settings you have the resources to cover up for the errors that can happen and the conditions that these malpractices can arise. So it's more alarming.
There was a question back here.
I just want to make a couple of comments relative to the young lady over here. I'm retired now, but I spent part of my career in labor delivery at a university medical center. I'm now doing volunteer work at a major university medical center in Chicago, which has a huge number of deliveries. And unfortunately, it's the most highly educated women who come in with a plan. Definitely, everybody wants to have an epidural. No one wants to suffer any discomfort at all in labor these days. And I've also heard that, I tour them as well as you're getting, to see where you're going to be delivered. They're highly educated, they're extremely well-read, they're mostly under the care of private physicians or group practices affiliated with the medical center. That's a huge problem. I mean, it's a problem at both ends of the spectrum for women who are disenfranchised in some ways, but it's your most highly educated people who are demanding the most intervention. And it's not just a few, it is many. And it's very distressing. So.
We're sort of out of time. Any last burning issues? I want to thank our group here. I want to thank you all. I want to say one thing, and this having had a second session. Yesterday, we had one looking at birth outcomes, and a 21-year-old woman, and she might be in the room, I don't see her actually, asked, how do we change this? And I think that one of the issues, and it depends on whether you are asking for things that you shouldn't be asking for or don't have any option for those issues, is that we really have to return to the issue of our bodies ourselves, and that it has to go back to women supporting women to get what they want. I do think it is interesting that there was a study made of a large number of women who supposedly had chosen C-section by maternal choice, which has been available since 2007. And out of the almost 3,000 women who recalled, who supposedly made C-section a maternal choice, almost 70% of them thought that they were having the C-section because something was emergent. So again, we have a documentation issue, and I think we need to be aware of what's going on here amongst insurance companies and hospitals and providers and consumers, and we're all responsible. So have a good time, and if you're interested in being on this committee, please let me have the sheet back and we'll work on it again. Thank you.